address. And I've been working with Daryl Creeks for over 5 years, and we're just at a standstill.
Can you repeat your address, please?
3235 Black Ridge Road in Greenwood.
Thank you.
Is this canal water, or is this your potable water?
This is my metered potable water. And the problem is, go ahead.
No, go ahead. I'm listening. Yeah.
Okay, so I bought this house in 2015, and on this property is a huge water holding tank. And it is devised to create water pressure for everybody on this road. And unfortunately, because they put it at the highest point, which is at my address, I'm the only one that doesn't get adequate water. I only get 4 pounds of pressure at the meter. So I run out of water when I'm using the hose full blast. I can't use a pressure washer at my house. I can't run a bathtub and the washing machine at the same time. It's a real problem. I do have a pressure pump at the house so I can get pressure. But as soon as the water in the line that goes from the house out to the meter runs out, that meter cannot supply enough. The demand is more than the supply. So then I just run out of water. And it's because I live alone, I've been able to live with this. Okay. But I want to put my house on the market, and no one's going to buy a house that cannot supply enough water for a family of three. And I have called and complained every summer for the last 5 years. They come out, they waste man hours trying to figure out how to fix it. They can't come up with a solution. They told me to call a pump, DMI pump. They came out, they said, yep, it's not you, it's GPUD's problem. I've called Tenco to come out, and they said, if I put a holding tank in, I still need 3 gallons a minute to fill the holding tank, which I only get a gallon and a half minute water that trickles down to the house. And I'm just really frustrated. And pretty much GPUD has said, we're not going to change anything to help one customer. Okay. So
Jeff, can you deal with this down the road?
Yeah, I'm familiar with this problem, and you know, Daryl has talked to me about it. I understand your because of the lack of elevation difference or lack of head between the tank and your house, the pressure is low, and we've been brainstorming some ideas. And actually, I was planning on working with Daryl to come out and take a look at it sometime next week. And I apologize for Daryl. Daryl is on jury duty, so he is not on this call today. He is not able to participate.
But Jeff, this has been going on for 5 years. I've been complaining, and they've sent people out every single summer for 5 years. And I've showed them videos. He's well aware of the problem. I've done everything on my end, and basically I've just pretty much been told to pound sand. It's just too bad. They're not going to fix it for one person. And then they said, well, there's an ordinance from 1987 that says GPUD does not guarantee amount of water or pressure. So even El Dorado County requires 5 gallons a minute on a well. And, you know, if I knew when I bought this house, if it was disclosed to me when I filled out an application for service that this property has an issue with supplying water, I would have never bought the property, and now I'm just stuck.
All right, Maureen, we'll be in touch. I won't personally, but Jeff and the crew will be in touch. This is okay. The first time we've ever myself heard about this, so we'll jump on it. We'll take care of it for you.
Well, I appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else? Public forum.
Hey, this is Tony Franco. I'm at 4646 Highway 193. You all have heard me talk before. Just have something interesting that happened. So Thursday, September 24th, again, I live on Georgetown and Poverty Creek, where basically they meet on my property. On Thursday, September 24th, at approximately 10:15 p.m., I went to bed. There hasn't been any water in Georgetown Creek for months now, Georgetown Creek / Greenwood Creeks. So no water has been flowing at all, bone dry. So go to bed Thursday, September 24th at 10:15 p.m. I wake up at 2 a.m. On Friday, September 25th, and the creek is flowing like normal. Just tons of water, just like it. Nothing ever happened. It was very odd. Basically, the water then stopped completely, essentially on October 1st, October 2nd, where basically now the creek is now 100% bone dry. So again, all the fish, and also on top of this, roughly at about the same time on October 2nd, now Poverty Creek is 100% bone dry. There were some fish in there. I took pictures of them. I took videos. They're all dead now. And I'm just trying to figure out really what's going on. The explanation provided by Jeff Nelson initially was, quote unquote, "I doubt district ditch maintenance operations had anything to do with the flow in Georgetown Creek being reactivated." He then sent a separate email maybe a couple days later saying, "Hello, Mr. Franco. It appears that the ditch was partially blocked by a fallen dead tree, which caused water to overflow the ditch during with the week of September 25th. This is probably what accounted for the re-wetting of Georgetown Creek over the weekend." The thing is right here is it wasn't a re-wetting. It was literally like the creek just started flowing like it normally had for almost 100 years since the gold miners made the ditch. So the creek is obviously fed. The creek is obviously fed by the ditch. And I have two government agencies. I made this part of public record. There's one report by the California geologist from Fish and Wildlife who came out. There was also another report by the California Water Rights Board. Both these reports basically indicate that the creeks are definitely fed by the ditch. So what I'm asking for is for basically GPUD to go back and do the CEQA properly. Basically, the CEQA was absolutely not done properly. The exemption of having to do an EIR, an environmental impact report, definitely has a major role in this. So what I'm asking for is basically for you guys to go back, do the CEQA properly, and basically to rebuild the ecosystem that is now destroyed. For those of you that don't believe that there are video that there's creek fish in the creek, then I suggest you look at the things I made part of public record, and also take a look at the two government agencies that have basically validated my point of saying that the creek, the Georgetown, Greenwood, Poverty Creeks are all fed by the ditch's seepage. So there's a lot more I have to say, but obviously I have 3 minutes. So I appreciate you guys looking into this, but I'd really like there to be the natural flow in the creek. And I'm not a GPUD customer. I have a couple wells on my property. It's not about, you know, water that I need at all. It's really just basically bringing back a natural ecosystem that's right now completely destroyed. So thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Tony. Anyone else from the public?
Yeah. Can you guys hear me? This is Luke Pryor. This is my first Zoom call, and I don't know how to make my camera work. Can you hear me?
That's right. We can hear you, Luke. Go ahead.
Okay. Well, I live in Greenwood off of Alder Glen Road, and I have the same problem with the creek drying up. Greenwood Creek has been totally dry. And I've been here for 15 years, and I've never seen it like this ever. And I have pictures of dead fish also. And, you know, it's just really depressing to see the creek not flowing due to GPUD's fault, from what I hear. And You know, it lower. I'm sure it's going to lower my house, my property value, and not to mention the ecosystem. And basically, that's about all I had to say. And I'm just hope that GPUD can go back and make the creeks flow again like they have for over 100 years. And that's about it.
Thank you, Luke. Just for information, my family's been here since the early 50s.
Yeah.
I don't know if you've ever been to Garden Valley Park, Community Park. Go south by there right now. There's no water in it, very little. I live on Bear Creek Road. That's where James Marshall had a cabin right at Bear Creek. Stop on by Bear Creek. It's empty. That has nothing to do. Bear Creek has nothing to do with any GPUD ditches. So I can definitely tell you by my family history, the creeks do dry up.
If he's on mute.
But we're going to be doing some investigation on it, and we are. Anyone else? All right. All right. Not seeing any. We don't have any proclamations and presentations.
Let's President, go on to consent. President Souza? We have another customer, Steve Hoffman, who's on trying to raise his hand.
I can't see him. Go ahead.
Oh, okay. I think, Kelly, he may need your help if he's trying to figure out how to unmute.
He's unmuted.
He's unmuted.
Should be able to talk now. Tim's unmuted.
Mr. Hoffman and Mr. Croft, you're unmuted if you want to make a comment.
Okay. My name is James Croft. I'm in on Cherry Acres Road, and I'm kind of the person that has taken care of at least 8 other boxes that feed to other people, and we've experienced nothing but issue problems with the pressures under our line because they're not operating enough maintenance on that part of the property to be able to get the pressure up where it belongs, where you get a decent flow with your box and the regulation of it, which is like a 6-inch head, they tell me, then the opening that feeds into it. All they're doing is running the end of the ditch to us. And we're not getting the proper maintenance on that line, which was put in roughly in 1982 or 83, and we had to operate it ourselves and made all the maintenance on it for 5 years, and under the direction of Steve Gow and Chuck Giroux, we were told that we had to do that for 5 years, and then we would give you guys the property to take care of the maintenance on it, and we gave it to you and deeded it over. You can check your own records if you have them. And we are experiencing a lot of issues with our maintenance on that line. And we have another situation on the end of that line. It's a dead end on the line. There's an individual's residence that the property that it goes across. And there's easements that I understand you have, but we're prohibited by threats from the individual to get on there and even go to our box and do maintenance ourselves on it. And so I'm really upset with it. Now, I talked with your interim manager about a week and a half or 2 weeks ago and told him of the issues. And he accused me at the time that I had collaborated with one of your board people, and that I was put up to this, and that's a lot of baloney, okay? I happened to be in the parking lot making some phone calls when this individual came to me, and we talked briefly at the front door, and your individual person that screens at the front door invited me in, and this individual had some drawers that they had to do there at that meeting. But we're just getting nothing but static and no effort. We don't get phone calls returned, and we're really fed up with it ourselves. for a long time now on this. And I would love to see some change come about. It's ridiculous. We have a problem with fires around here. We can't maintain our properties properly. We don't get the water that we're supposed to get. And we have, where we are, some wetland areas which affect wildlife and everything else that, that goes on with the ecology. So that's basically what I have to say at this point. Steve, do you have anything you want to say?
Oh, I think you said it pretty much pretty good, Jim, but the box itself has a screen over it, and they were saying when they come and look at it, they say, well, the water's flowing over the box, but that screen gets moss and debris on it, and that screen needs to be cleaned off, and we can't get through that easement to come in and clean it because that guy threatens us with a gun. So it needs to be, that screen needs to be cleaned off, and the box itself needs to have the mud cleaned out of it that collects. So if that was done, I think we'd be getting the proper amount of water that we should get. So Jim pretty much did a really good job of saying what's going on, and we appreciate what you're doing. Hopefully we get the everything straightened out and the water delivered properly.
Thank you. Anyone else? There's some people I can't see, so if one of the other board directors can see anybody.
I do not see anyone else.
Okay. Consent calendar.
Director Souza, before we go on to consent calendar, let's go back and do the Pledge of Allegiance, if we should.
Oh, I am so sorry.
We missed that. Yep, that's
right. I'm so sorry.
I know. We got right into the thick of things there.
Yeah.
Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States.
United States of America, and to this republic for which it stands,
one nation,
nation under God, indivisible, with liberty, justice for all.
There we go.
Thanks, Mike. Okay, consent calendar, approval of the minutes.
I had no issues, so I will move forward for approval of the consent calendar, unless anyone had anything to pull.
No, I'll second that. Looks good to me.
Dane Wadley, excuse me, I'm sorry.
Aye.
And Dave Halpin?
Aye.
And myself, aye. Thank you. Financial reports?
I think that was part of the consent calendar.
I do, you know, I do that every time.
Informational items.
Yeah, informational items, yes. Board reports.
Mine is pretty quick because I will just be attending the three meetings this month. One is the water conservation one for, this is the one that's going to determine the calculations for the outdoor residential water rates. So that should be what the budget's going to be for the district. So that should be pretty interesting to see and make sure that it's represents our area up here. Also, we'll be attending the LAFCO meeting, and hopefully we'll get a grants committee meeting up in the next 2 to 3 weeks.
Thanks, Mike. Cindy?
Unmute myself. Just a couple items. Question for the general manager. Jeff, just want to check with you to see if checks might be available to be signed this week. I haven't been in touch with you in a few weeks now, so just wondered if checks are going to be ready to sign this week.
I believe they will be. I will give you some different times that you can choose from for what's most convenient for you.
Okay, yeah, I can make myself available anytime it's convenient for you and your staff. Also, thank you for forwarding on the email from Donna Siemens, and I appreciate you following up with her. And if you would you provide her with the same information that you provided me on your follow-up with her?
Yeah, I'd be happy to.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt. I was referring to the email, I wasn't clear. Could you, the email that you sent me to follow up, can you follow up with her with that same information?
If you haven't already? I said I'd be happy to, yes.
Oh, okay, great, thank you. Let's see. Let's see, that's a redundant question. I'm sorry, I wrote it down twice. I noticed that the last time that I was signing checks, I've been tracking and I haven't seen any of the Churchill White checks. Last time I signed a Churchill White check was on 7/20. So I'm just wondering if there's a reason why, is there something going on with the Churchill White checks? I haven't seen any of those in a while.
Yes. That's due to my schedule and late billing on my part.
Okay, great. Thank you, Barbara. Mm-hmm. And last question, Jeff, for you is transfers. You had mentioned in the past that October is the month where you do the transfers into the capital reserve funds. So I'm just wondering, I didn't see any in the financial statement. So I'm just wondering if there were any monies removed into the capital reserve fund, and that's besides the temporary water transfer funds.
So no, and the board will be made aware of, or will be asked to approve the transfers, I believe. The audit has started this week. Christina, I don't know, can you provide an update on the audit and typically the schedule for when, if there's any surplus funds in the operating budget, when that might be transferred, please?
Well, we just actually started our audit early this year. We started it yesterday. It's going to go through the end of this week. We're trying to make sure that everything's been obviously booked correctly. We'll be looking at all of the balances, and I'm sure Kristen will be helping me if there's anything that we can transfer, since Steve had said that he wanted to transfer $500,000, that if we can transfer up to, we will. If not, you know, whatever we can based on our reserve policy. And it will be noted, you know, with the financials at the time that it's done.
Yeah, I believe it'll be formally on in the board agenda, probably the November board agenda, and we'll be requesting the board to approve the transfer.
Okay, great. Thank you very much. President Sousa, that's all I have at this time.
Thanks, Cindy. Dane?
Just the only thing I wanted to bring up, I sent out to the board, I sent to staff, and staff sent to the board information about a statewide grant that's available for districts like us for critical infrastructure facilities and responding to the power safety shutoffs. So obviously encourage staff to look at that one closely if we can apply for any grant funds. And obviously there's a pretty quick turnaround on that with the deadline. So. Appreciate the looking into that. And then Dave, I assume Director Sousa, you talk about the ditch race.
Oh, go ahead.
Oh, okay. So just wanted to thank the district, and Director Sousa and I attended the first annual Ducky Ditch Race, which GDPUD was a sponsor or was a partner on in the community to as a fundraiser for the Divide Ready by Five and feeding families up here on the Divide. Had a real nice event over by the school district, over by Greenwood's or Georgetown School, excuse me. And just good community event for us to all be a part of and for the district to take some leadership on. So appreciate everyone's involvement on that, and certainly staff's assistance. I think we raised, $1,500, if I recall.
Yeah. Yep. About $1,500. Yeah, that goes to the kids on the Divide.
Yep, good stuff.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. And the water's cold, believe me.
Thank you.
Dave Halpin, do you have anything?
No, not at this time.
Okay. We'll close that. General Manager report, Jeff.
Sure. First off, I'd like to talk a little bit about the temporary water transfer, which was completed a few weeks ago. And Adam will speak more about this, but we will be submitting our final invoice to Westlands Water District tomorrow for $404,000. And that'll result in a total net income to the district of $665,000. That is, to put it in perspective, that's about 30% of the revenue that we receive from the potable water customers. So this is basically equivalent to a 30% rate increase for 1 year to our potable water customers. So I really applaud the board for approving that. Let's see what else. Irrigation season, and Adam will speak more about this as well. And that ended on September 30th. We sold just around 4,000 acre feet of water. The water transfer was 2,000. And actually the revenue we received from the irrigation customers was $409,000. So we got equivalent of $102 an acre foot. Just kind of compare that to the amount of revenue we received for the water transfer. It's more than three times. Let's see what else. Water Smart Grant, Adam will talk about that. We're initiating our negotiations with the MOU that's going to expire with Local 39. Let's see, COVID-19 update. There's a couple of things here. We reconfigured the office space in the district office. Kelly included a photo in the general manager's report. We really are trying to enforce social distancing within the office. We're also going to really start holding a hard line on COVID-19 risk management protocols. And I'm an engineer, so I try to manage risk, and you know, we'll see what happens with COVID-19, but I'm kind of expecting the COVID-19 situation to get worse, a lot worse before it gets better. So we are going to really try and insist upon people entering the office and staff follow COVID-19 protocols. There has been some new state legislation that has been passed, Senate Bill 1159. We have to report a certain number of positive cases to our insurance carrier now. We have to comply with COVID-19 regulations, and there's a $10,000 penalty if we do not report any of our COVID-19 cases to our insurance carrier. There's Assembly Bill 685, and this requires all employers to have specific COVID-19 protocol in place, and that if there's an outbreak in our facility and OSHA investigates, the district will be liable for workman's comp, and we will be subject to a $25,000 fine. So with these, I'm going to respectfully request if any directors want to visit the district office, if they just please coordinate with me first, I would really appreciate that. So we're really taking the COVID-19 situation seriously, especially moving forward into the flu season, and that now there are also some state legislative requirements that we have to follow, otherwise the district is liable and subject to some significant fines. So I appreciate that. We are still, I think we're working out all the kinks in our phone system. We're just trying to revamp the menu when people call in to make it easier. We're trying to put the extensions that people are requesting the most earlier in the voicemail menu. So I encourage any of the directors to call into the district and, you know, try it out and provide any feedback you may have to the phone system. And then something for today, we did receive some new flumes for certain areas of the district's distribution system. These are metal flumes. One of them is going to go in by Greenwood Lake. So we are doing work around Greenwood Lake. This will be posted on the company website or on the district website and on Facebook. So some of that, the access to the back of the lake is going to be restricted because of the work we're doing. So just want to give you guys a heads up on that. So with that, that's an overview. If you have any questions, please feel free to ask me.
Jeff, I have one question for you. On the information that Christina provided back to the county chief administrator's office, I noticed in number five, there, or actually in any of her answers, there was not any additional information provided to the county about the cost of the permits for our dam fees or our water fees. And we pay huge amounts to the state agencies, both DWR and State Water Resources Control Board, for these permit fees. Do you think that's some information that the county administrative offices should be aware of, is the huge amount of that we're obligated to pay for these fees for the dam and the dam safety projects, as well as the permit fees for the water?
Well, I'll let Christina respond as well, but I, you know, we provided them the information they asked for. And Christina, did they request any other additional information, or did they, can you sort of elaborate on how that back and forth went, please?
They weren't asking about things that we paid. They were asking about revenue sources. They weren't asking about expenses. They were wanting to know about our fees that we charge our customers, and how could we raise those fees if we lost our property tax revenue.
Okay, I'm specifically referring to question five that says, if you were unable to cover costs, would you be able to decrease service levels? And what would happen if you could no longer provide sufficient services? So it, to me, cover cost and sufficient services means paying our required fees to the state agencies so that we can maintain our permit to have water, serve water. So I'm just, it seemed like it could have been included in number five if it was additional information and more justification for why we need that tax money.
I thought that our answer sort of included that. It was sort of a general response, but you know, Christina, do you want to, can you add to that?
I consulted with iBailey on our responses to them. I don't know, is Kristen on the phone call right now? I mean, that's the, when it came to providing services, we can't really cut paying the state or, you know, there was nothing. They were wanting to know, how could you raise your rates, and, or what could you do to save money? And you can't really save money on your permits. I kind of don't understand how that would fit in our answers.
Okay, I was hoping that maybe we would make the case that because we have all these required expenditures and these permit fees, it would greatly impact us if we did not.
Yeah, I made the case that we can't raise. There aren't a lot of things that we can raise, because they wanted to know, is there anything outside of the Prop 218 that you can raise rates to cover if you lost the money? And I made the case that there weren't really very many other revenue sources other than treated water and irrigation water, or things that were subject to a 218.
Okay, great. Thank you. Thank you for the clarification. That's all I have.
This is Director Saunders here. I'll chime in on that. I'm going to be going to the LAFCO meeting, and I see this is one of the issues, especially on next year, where even less money may be coming in. So pretty much keep making the case for us, especially when it comes to infrastructure and maintenance of a water district, as opposed to some other special districts that don't have these huge infrastructures and dams and pipelines and stuff that is kind of essential for us to also have the property tax for. And also, I believe our MSR, the Municipal Service Review, is coming up. So they can also look at that into play to see the kind of services that we do in the district and how that relates to the taxes. And also, with the flumes, Jeff, do you know how many flumes that we have and if what additional areas were they planning on doing? Because I know there's...
Adam, I'm going to let Adam answer that question.
Okay.
Yeah, the two additional flumes are one's going kind of by the shop area to monitor the flow into the main canal, and the other one's going to go near Greenwood Lake, downstream of it. And then we have one to install at Stumpy as well, mm-hmm. The correct sized one.
So it's three flumes, one large one and two not as large ones.
Because I know there's one more, that one area that leaks, that is another flume issue down in the ALT area. So I was just seeing if that was one that was coming up. But
So we do have a flume by after the treatment plant. So we have a flume after the treatment plant, then we have a measuring device after it leaves the trails. It's a staff gauge that we do a rating curve on.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Jeff, you have anything else for the manager's report?
Dave, can I ask just one quick question?
Oh, sure. Go ahead, Dane.
Sure. Hey, Jeff, did I get that right? $665,000 is the net for the water transfer?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you. I just wanted to know if I got that right. Appreciate it. I'm done.
So just to be clear, Jeff, so we're not going to send any more water down there. We're not getting any more money from them, and we don't owe them anything for next year, correct?
We're not sending any more water. We stopped the water transfer on September 23rd. We also stopped the irrigation season on September 30th. So I think right now the flow out of Stumpy is what, Adam, 3 CFS or something?
4.95.
Yeah. Hopefully we are going to get more money because we're going to send them an invoice for $404,000. So yeah, but not more than the 665. And what was the third part of your question, President Souza? I'm sorry.
Well, we don't have to donate. It was on Facebook. I can't remember what that person said, but the transfer is done. We don't have to give our water away to them next year, correct?
Well, we do have a refill agreement. And that is an obligation that we need to fulfill. But there is a lot of flexibility. Well, there is some flexibility in the refill agreement. So,
and we're 66% full right now as of today,
which is pretty close to our average,
right?
At this time of year,
I can remember when Stumpy Meadows was built. So I see the fluctuations over the years of Stumpy Lake Edison Lake. So it looks great right now. Looks good. So people think that we're going dry, and it's not true. Not true.
Jeff, can I ask you one clarifying question? And thanks for bringing this up, Dane. The water transfer, if I remember correctly, which is never a good thing to do since I have a crappy memory, I thought the original transfer agreement was for $700,000, and it was going to be about $100,000 in admin fees and consulting fees. So we were going to get about $600,000. If we're getting $665,000, are we getting a little bit more than we expected?
Well, you know, that's a good point. So correct that. Go ahead, Adam.
I was going to say, so you're correct, Cindy, but so there's a 5% loss that gets applied to the transfer. So automatically it's 1,900 acre feet instead of 2,000. And then there is the cost, the consulting cost. So I guess that it would be a gross of $665, a net once all the final environmental invoices we have from the consultant that helped do the transfer, that would be your net. We don't have that numbers. We don't have all of those.
Our net. Yeah. So that, I didn't mean to mislead you. So yeah.
Okay. Great. No, I was just kind of hoping we got extra money out of it somehow. Thank you.
Anything else, Jeff?
No, not for the general manager's report.
Adam, you're up. Some great news,
well,
I hear.
Well, actually, I think it's Daryl's report is next.
Well, that's right. You're going to take over Daryl's. That's right. Go ahead.
Yeah, and I don't look like Daryl, and so please bear with me. I'll try and be quick here. There was a typo in the original report that Daryl submitted for the Stumpy Meadows volume, and he had August, and the number was correct. The 13,064 was correct. It was the month was wrong, so that's actually September. And then real quickly, the filter rebuild at the Walden treatment plant, that is going to be, it's on schedule to be finished this week, and they're on or ahead of schedule, and they're on budget for that. And we're going to start the courtyard roof repair, hopefully this week. They're just waiting on a permit to begin the project. So right now we're scheduled to start that on Thursday. Oh, and then another thing. Oh, we continue to have what I consider a lot of leaks. And to me, because and Joe Aguilar can speak to this when he talks, that the district is at a bit of a, it's a little different than a lot of other districts. It's not an urban district. It's very spread out. So the amount, the length of pipe that we have to maintain per the amount of customers we have is high. You know, the ratio of customers to pipe length is very low, so we don't have a lot of customers to spread the costs out to do the appropriate repair and replacement and rehabilitation of the pipeline. So really it is kind of a, the amount of leaks, I know people are getting kind of used to them, but it's sort of a testament to the fact that the district's infrastructure is aging. And sooner or later, it's going to have to be addressed. But I kind of went off on a tangent there. But, you know, we keep kind of going over that. But the crew's been out on several weekends over the past month repairing various sizes of leaks. And, you know, I just want to give a shout out to them. I mean, I think they're doing a great job. So that's it for me on Daryl's report.
Hey, Adam.
All right. So start with the zone report that's in front of you. The only thing really stands out is this increased escrows, you know, 12 of them, and then followed up with 18 of them. So that keeps Brian pretty busy out there, you know, making sure everyone's ready for their house to transfer, because it's definitely it's usually a pressing issue for homeowners and buyers to get that completed. So we try to stay on top as best as possible. We didn't see any other outlying factors or outlying issues this month. So pretty standard for the month of September. So as Jeff mentioned, the transfer completed that. We're issuing our final bill so we can get, you know, wrap that up and be done with that for now. As he mentioned too, you know, we're at 66% as of today. We're at 13,121 acre feet in the reservoir. So so it's a little bit below our average, but it's not, you know, not significantly below. So I think we're in a good position. Also wanted to add that I know it's been a while since we talked about it when we did our gauging, approve the gauging project. We are waiting for the irrigation season, so next month we're going to finish putting those gauges in and actually, you know, lower the one at Stumpy Meadows, because when we initially put it in, the road star didn't get that low, so we're going to extend that one deeper. So hopefully we'll have those wrapped up next couple months, so we'll have a lot more monitoring data coming through in 2021, which will be good. More data is always better. Also want to add that we had the El Dorado County Water Agency added or developed in coordination with, you know, us, EID, Grizzly Flats Water Resource Development Management Plan that we completed in 2019. So we had a inaugural meeting last week. It's kind of with county supervisor
Eldorado County Water Agency, SMUD was there, and it's kind of just discussing the goals that plan developed, and then how we move forward, and it's discussing this, how everyone, you know, needs to work together between the Forest Service and all the water purveyors to make sure we meet those goals in the next few years, you know, and it's understanding the water resources in the area. And really there, I think the main point that came out of it was just focusing on the water agency and working with the state and federal stakeholders, you know, to identify opportunities for small districts like us to meet those goals that were outlined in the water resource development plan. So we're just moving forward with that. The good news you were mentioning is automated meter project. So the SRF loan is we have been approved. The state approved it. So they're drafting the contract. Should have it any day. So when we get that will go to Barbara so they can review and make sure we're all on the same page with the contract terms. So in the time being, we'll start preparing RFB to submit for contractors to, you know, bid on, because that needs to be approved by the state as well, because, you know, they're financing the project before any construction loans would be released. So that process, you know, you say a couple months, so we're anticipating probably spring this project would get going. And I don't know why my camera keeps turning off, but so in spring we anticipate, and by then we'll know also in February, March, if the Water Smart grant comes through. So it's almost, if it comes, I guess it's gonna be the perfect timing for everything, which would be great if it all comes together. One other thing is we have upcoming October 24th. Darrell and I are going to participate in a climate change webinar that the Georgetown Library, the Friends of Georgetown Library, are putting together. So it's on a Saturday between 1 to 3. So we'll have a 20-minute talk of how the district is dealing with climate change moving forward. And a lot of it will be tied to the water resource development and management plan that the agency did, because they kind of looked at, you know, the long-term forecast. So we'll tie the data that was found into that, you know, that report, and then we'll match it with what, you know, what we're doing, how we're, you know, trying to conserve water and, you know, like the meter project, like any ditch lining stuff, to really secure our water resource. So that's all I have. So if you have any questions, yeah.
Adam, I have one for you.
Yeah.
Were you able to work with Christina and Tyler to see if there was a list of meters that works with the Tyler Technology software?
I have not got there yet, no. You know, I think that's going to be an RF in our bid. That will be in there, you know, to make sure that's clear. But I haven't gone down that avenue yet, because I wasn't sure we had the SRF, you know, I wasn't sure that was coming through yet. So I was kind of holding off. But now that I know that, yeah, I'll be doing that.
Thank you.
Yeah.
That's all I have. Thanks. Thanks for your report.
Yep. Adam, can you just remind me, just kind of walk me through the process, or walk all of us through the process real quick? So you said that we have the SRF. So you would submit an RFP for, I guess, construction, if you will, for lack of a better term. Mm-hmm. And that would come to the board first and then go to the state, I assume, to then be funded.
Yeah,
and
so
then all that, we're kind of, you know, we have this parallel process of trying to secure the grant as well, right?
Correct. So I'm not 100% on the mechanics yet. I think I'm going to use Gloria as a resource here too. I know she's not on the call, but because it's going to be the same process with the treatment plant. So how I envision it working is us doing the RFP, you know, and that will be, you know, obviously brought to the board, because it's going to be a significant sum of money. And then the board will approve, and then the state also has to approve, because they have to make sure it meets their requirements. So I think it'll be kind of just together at the same time, you know, here's RF, you know, the bid that the board approved, you know, that we think is going to fit our needs, it's going to meet all our criteria, you know, and give it to the state at that time. and see, you know, it does meet your requirements. And if it does, then we move forward.
Yeah, I don't know how you all do it, but some boards approve the RFP before it goes out, depending on the size of the contract. Would the board want to review the RFP first before we released it for the water meters? Well, you can let me know later, but I'll check. We'll check the policy on that. And then, as Adam said, the contract, the low bidder will then meets the criteria that are specified in the RFP, including being compatible with the Tyler system, will be brought to the board for approval. And it'll, as I'm restating what Adam said, but, and the state would have to approve it as well.
There would obviously be, a condition in there about, you know, securing the grant as well, because that's, of course, part of the financing. And if for some reason it doesn't, then we'd have to reevaluate.
So the state did approve it on the full cost. So,
oh, okay.
You know, when we originally brought it to the board, it wasn't there was no supplemental funding from the Water Smart grant.
Okay.
So the grant would just
go in lieu of, you know, however much grant we get for the amount of money that the state would loan us.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. We would apply the grant to the loan.
Right. Okay. Okay. Yeah. Right. Same thing. All right. Thank you.
Great news. Right on.
Yeah, it's exciting.
Is that it, Adam? For you?
That's all I had. Yep. Thanks.
Thanks for your hard work. It's been a long 2 years, my friend. Thank you.
feels like a long time, for sure.
I know. Tyler Technologies, Christina. Christina with us, Kelly?
It says that she's still on the call. Hold on.
We can always come back to her.
I will text her and ask her to come back.
Okay, let's move on. We'll come back to her.
Sure.
Committees, ad hoc grant writing committee. I guess that's up to you, Mike.
Yep, so all the members, community volunteers agreed to come on board. We're gonna try and have our first official meeting this month. Once we get our first official meeting, I will send out the list of all the members on it so the board knows who's actually on it. I know Dane asked who we had for the members. So once we meet and everybody's agreed to show up, we'll have that. I sent a letter out. We'll try to meet sometime in the next 3 weeks. At that meeting, we'll determine when our regular meetings are going to be. Right now, I have the template for matching our CIP projects with grants and start all the research and work with Adam and along with any of the other legal requirements and things we can do to help the staff moving forward also with this Water Smart grant. That's where we are now for that. And also thanks to Dane for the information with CSDA on the de-energizing stuff. Aqua also has information on that as well. And yeah, that's something we want to try to get in on as soon as possible because those funds will go quick. That's all I had. Thank you.
Christina should be available now.
There she comes. Hi, Christina.
Hi. Okay. Our Tyler update right now is we are still working through conversion with the utility billing side at this moment. Our financial side, they've done most of their work. They have been set back just a little bit because Tyler had some issues with security. And so they've kind of been at a standstill for 2 weeks. So they've picked up back where they left off. They're hoping that it's not going to push back our go live date for next month for financials or our December date for utility billing, but they have asked us to be a little flexible if for some reason they have to push things out for a week or two. So that's kind of currently where we're at. We're still moving forward.
Yeah, I've been getting updates from Tyler Technologies, and it's like they do have some kind of problems going on. So they're on top of it, right, Christina? That's what it looks like.
Yeah, their concern is they work with a lot of voting agencies. And so they said that it doesn't look like anybody's really had, you know, as far as their customers haven't really had any problems. They're just making sure that they've locked down their side of things so that it doesn't cause any, you know, larger issue. So that's kind of where they're at with it. I think they kind of completely shut things down while everything was being investigated. And they're starting to slowly get everything back online.
Thank you. Anything from the directors?
Just a quick question for Christina. How are you guys doing with Tyler Technology and the reports and the reports development? Has that been put on hold until you get done with the utility billing and the financials, since I know Go Live is coming up real soon?
Actually, no, the reporting goes hand with the Go Live for financials, because the reporting comes out of the financial modules. So they've gotten all of our information that we've given to them as far as how we want things grouped, because we haven't received any feedback from anybody else of what they want to see. So we've kind of given them the best information that we can. And you know, if after implementation we need to have some kind of detailed report that we don't already have access to, then we may end up having to pay them to build something else.
From the initial thing I looked at, a lot of the reports they had, and there's very few that we will ask that shouldn't be on it. So we should have everything.
Yeah, it's just making sure that we have everything mapped out the right way. So when we initially set everything up, and that's kind of why I've been reaching out for the last, you know, few months, is this is the back end. So when they're setting everything up for those reportings that you need, everything has to be set from the ground up. So if it's not put into the system how we need to generate those reports, they'll have to go in and they'll have to reconfigure things. So we're just hoping that from the input that we've received, that we've hopefully got things as clear as possible and in the way that people want them. And if we have to revisit it at a later date, if it's not what the board members want, then we'll have to do that.
Anyone else? Any board members? Nope. Okay. Leakage consideration. Jeff, is that yours?
Yeah. These are always a little complicated. In this case, Ms. Crawley lives about a quarter mile from the ALT treatment plant, and she had her water line was over 1,000 feet long, and she was having she had a high bill, so she obviously had a leak, and district staff worked with her. We made some suggestions. The house is no longer occupied, and they suggested just turning the water off. And she didn't want to do that because she has cats, and she goes there regularly to turn the water on to give to the cats. And she's an elderly lady. And then what district staff did was there a water main actually runs close to her house, so they reconnected her water meter directly at the closest spot near her house, which was only about 200 feet away, and the leak disappeared. So they abandoned 800 feet or so of that other line that ran from the water main closer to the treatment plant. They reconnected it to a water main that was closer to her house, and that solved the problem. So we did give her a leakage consideration according to the board policy, which is attached. And I want to kind of clarify in my staff recommendation, I wish I would have rephrased that. I'm going to rephrase it now. And while it says, while district staff feels a leakage consideration, what it should say is the leakage consideration granted to Ms. Crawley is consistent with the district policy. You know, I don't want to say what's fair and what's not fair. It just is basically consistent with the district policy, and it's up to the board to decide if you want to give her further consideration.
And I guess she's on a fixed income. What kind of money are we talking? I mean, how much money does she owe us? The district.
Well, it was her bill was what, 800 and I'm trying to see it here. So the leakage allowance not deducted $229, so she still owes $655. So we went from 890 to 655. Or 884 to 665.
Does she know about the 665?
Yeah, she then called back and said, you know, gosh, I really would, you know, like you guys to consider lowering it even more.
Can I did she something? Suggest a dollar amount that she would be happy with?
I don't know. Kelly, did you feel that call?
I did not speak to Ms. Crowley. I know that Daryl has spoken to Ms. Crowley and Chelsea has spoken to Ms. Crowley.
Yeah. Okay. It was Chelsea. Yeah. No, she did not. She did not suggest what she wanted it to be. She just said she was hoping for more. You know, if you want to cut it in half, you know, I mean, I don't know.
Jeff, when staff went out to take a look at things, were they able to determine, was this original pipe this long distance, 1,000 feet, since she's close to our treatment plant, was all of that pipeline on her property or was
yes.
any of
yes.
our property for the treatment plant?
That's her pipe, yeah. It was her pipe.
It's her pipe. Okay. So there's no way that our treatment plant and the end of the construction in any way could have damaged the pipe?
No.
Okay.
I mean, I don't think so, but... No. Okay. So district staff went and relocated the meter for her. And
is Ms. Crowley on our low income assistance program?
That I do not know. I know she had a tenant in the house. It's a rental house for her.
Okay.
I personally, I mean, on all these cases, I feel we should err on the side of the customer on these matters, understanding, you know, we can't gift public funds, but, you know, if the general guidelines was $220 of relief, and she still owes $600, I would be happy to split the difference on the $600 and cut that in half again and say, you know, we've been more than generous and understand these things happen myself. I mean, I'm not saying that's right, but that's what I would be willing to support and in the spirit of erring on the side of the customer.
Did you say that there's a renter in that house while all this was going on?
No, the renter was paying the bill, and I don't know how long the leak was going on, but when the renter vacated the property, the bill reverted to Ms. Crowley, and then she went, oh my gosh, look at, you know, this why is this bill so high? And, you know, then it was determined that she had a leak. And so, I mean, it was a lot of water. I'm trying to look at what the cubic footage was here, but... it was quite a bit of water that she was using.
It was 29,000 cubic feet.
Yeah, 29,585. So that's clearly she had a leak. So.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, to Jeff's point, I mean, I think he kind of brought up, you kind of went there, Jeff, about kind of splitting the difference. If you split the difference with Ms. Crowley, it's what, about $442, you know.
Or double the leakage consideration. I don't know what you guys.
Yeah. I mean, something like that, but you know, it seems reasonable to help out a customer and, you know, obviously taking into consideration the district's interest as well. So
I'd be happy for 442.
Yep, I agree.
Okay. Well, in that case, then I'll make a motion to.
Before you do, Dane, can I make a comment real quick?
Sure.
Thank you. I agree as well, but just to make a comment that make all of us aware that by doing this, we're setting a precedent. So if we have other folks that come to us with a leakage consideration issue, it would be good if we could somewhat standardize. So if we're going to give a leakage consideration of twice what we have here, if that's what we're saying, which is roughly $230. So if we're going to go twice that, which is $460, it drops her total bill then down quite a bit. And is that the precedent we want to set going forward for others who come with us with a similar type of issue?
Cindy, okay. if I could respond to that, maybe. I would agree that we're setting a precedent, but the precedent that I see being sent is we review each individual case on its own merits, and based on those individual circumstances, we're more or less setting a precedent that we would err on the side of the customer. Nothing beyond that.
Case in point.
You understand what I'm saying? I mean, yeah, it's an individual case. We've heard the individual merits of this case, and any other case would stand on its own merits and be subject to our review. And we could, at that point, choose to forgive 100% or 50% or nothing. And that would be at the discretion of the five board members based on the individual merits of a case presented to us. And that's, I think, is the only precedent that I feel we're establishing.
Yeah, case in point, we had a gentleman, and Jeff and the crew have been dealing with this guy. He says, oh, my water bill is outrageous. It's been outrageous for months. It's been, there's no leaks, blah, blah, blah. We found out he was lying to us, and he admitted to it. So a case on case. And look how many man hours it took to deal with this one gentleman that was lying to us all along. And as I said, he admitted lying to us. So that's a case in point that we have to go from case to case.
Okay, so by giving the Ms. Crowley some grace here and allowing us to reduce her bill even further, I agree. We're judging the merits of this case, and we would do this still going forward individually. But if we decide to do this particular case twice the leakage consideration, and then on another case, we decide to do something a little bit differently, I don't want to have the customers or the board be in an awkward situation where the customer comes back and says, but you gave them this much and you're only giving me that sort of thing. So just so that we're all aware of that, but I'm fine with have suggested, Dane, if you
want to
go ahead and make your motion.
Yep, yeah, chime in that this is also a case where there was a meter which was 100 feet away from our house, and the pipe was redone, and a meter moved, and a pipe was taken off, and that pipe that's no longer being used had the leak in it. So this is a lot of circumstances in it than others. So case by case, it'll probably be very specific.
So with all those comments, I would be happy to second the motion.
Motion wasn't made yet.
Yeah, I'll make a motion to.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought you did.
Basically, I guess have Ms. Crowley's trying to see how to phrase this. Basically, her bill, I guess, would be 442.40, which is half of what the original bill for her July, August 2020 bill was. And that the additional amount past the 655, what is that? I got 98, something like that.
So I think half the original bill kept.
Yeah, half the original bill would be is my motion for Ms. Crowley's.
Okay, so basically you're taking, Dane, you're suggesting half of her July, August bill, which was $884.80. So you're suggesting that we cut that in half?
Right, so it'd be 442.40. That's okay. My motion.
Okay.
Do you have a second?
I'll second that motion.
Okay. Mike Saunders?
Aye.
Cindy?
Aye.
And myself, aye. Thank you, Jeff, for dealing with this.
Yeah, we'll have to probably word it in a way since you already got 229, so the half is actually an extra 229.
Okay, Finance Committee, whose baby is this?
I requested that we have a discussion on the Finance Committee. And I guess the discussion I'd like to have, I don't think there's any actionable items in front of us here, but there's been a lot of talk about the Finance Committee and disbanding the Finance Committee. And so in response to that, the discussion I would like to put out is, firstly, I would like to qualify my statements that I'm a big fan of the Finance Committee. I sat on the Finance Committee and have sat on the Finance Committee at ALT. I think they're important and have always supported the need for a Finance Committee. I voted for Steve Miller to be on the Finance Committee, and him and I are, in fact, quite friendly on a personal level. With all that framework and background, my view on a Finance Committee is that the charter that the Finance Committee should work under should have a very defined focus. And particularly, the Finance Committee should not be the accounting committee. It should not be the personnel committee. It should not have broad range of areas. In fact, if we needed an audit committee, it should be an independent audit committee, independent of the Finance Committee, for you to have some sort of proper checks and balances. You don't want the Finance Committee auditing itself or the board auditing itself. And I certainly feel that in the proposed policies that we had, that had come to the board earlier, and I said it at the time, I felt it was greatly expanded the roles and responsibility of the Finance Committee. And for that reason, I voted against it. That was not to imply that I don't think we need one. I just think we need to establish a charter with a very well-defined, specific, and somewhat narrow roles and responsibility for the Finance Committee. And with that said, I would entertain anyone else's thought on what they view a Finance Committee might look like, and then we might challenge ourselves to move forward with reestablishing a new charter and that would then govern the reinstated Finance Committee. So that's my thoughts. I thought I would share it with the other four board members. And if interested, and I would be happy to lead the charge on this task. That's all I have.
Discussion?
Yep. One thing that I'd like to add as well is, especially with a committee like this, which is working with staff, one way to help let things go forward smoothly is, as with most committees that are related to the main organization, is to have one or two board committee members sit on this committee as well, so that there is that connection, that there is that direction. And also having two board members gives them a chance to switch on and off, so you're not there all the time. And that also helps keep things under the framework of, we're working for the board, we're working together, here's our direction. And it kind of helps keep it from going outside of what we've directed.
Yeah, I certainly could envision, we'd need a board liaison, we'd need a staff liaison, and then the committees, and you know, that would round out everyone's interests, whether it's one or two, whether it's the general manager or Christine, I don't, you know, that could all kind of be worked out. My proposal is we kind of establish a high level charter of what we want this group to do. And then from that charter, the specifics of policies and procedures would fall out, if you see what I'm saying. Kind of the difference between a constitution and laws, if you will, set the high level parameters of what that charter might look like.
Yeah, I mean, I'm certainly fine with that, and particularly with Director Halpin wanting to take the lead on it. He certainly has a lot of experience with our finance committee and other finance committees to develop, you know, something that we can look at in the future going forward, because I feel pretty similarly a lot with what he said. So appreciate you, Dave, taking on the work of this.
You know, trying to remain as humble as possible. You know, while I've been on a few finance committees on a volunteer basis, in a previous life, I've worked as a chief financial officer for a number of California corporations. And some of them were, you know, amazingly large in their magnitude of their annual budgets. And so I really, really have a clear understanding and a great deal of experience understanding the difference between a finance committee and an audit committee. And I feel that in small organizations like this, sometimes those roles and responsibilities and those checks and balances can easily be blurred. Very often, in my experience, people who volunteer for finance committee are bookkeepers and accountants, not financiers. And when those roles get mixed and people come with the quote bookkeeping accounting experience, it's not helpful for doing financial work. Not that it's not important, but they should be separate in checks and balances on each other. And I might be able to help to guide that such a way that we could write a charter for each of those different committees such that they would function nicely as independent checks and balances on each other, as opposed to having the same group check their own homework, which is, from a governance point of view, an easy mistake to get into in a small organization, but it can be troublesome. And I would offer my experience and expertise in that to try to guide us so we don't fall into that that trap.
Okay, any more discussion on this for now?
That sounds like a good idea. Thank you, Dave, for taking that on.
Well, okay, this is a great leeway. Go ahead.
I guess, we're not doing anything very formal, but based on this discussion, I'll do some homework and show up at even before the next meeting, because I'm a big fan of getting prepared before the meeting. I'll make sure I send out some draft charters and some of my thoughts so everybody can look at them and think about them. And then we'll throw it on the agenda for next month for us to have another discussion, and people can come prepared based on the work I've done, and we'll move forward to getting our finance committee reestablished and functioning the way we all would want it to look.
Thank you, Dave. What a leeway for Joe Aguilar.
Yeah, no, I'll pull him in for sure. He's a real smart character, and I have a lot of respect for him.
As long as Joe doesn't bill us for it, that'll be fine. Go ahead, Joe.
Well, thank you. And I would have to agree with David. There is a difference between finance committees and audit committees. And audit committees tend to have a much more narrow mission, and as an extension of the board. And the finance committee handles more, like David had mentioned, you know, financial issues and strategies, maybe a banking perspective. There's lots of things that can consume a lot of time. Where the audit committee, most of those functions have been very narrow regarding your annual audit, maybe internal audit functions, even operational audits, but it's been much more narrow. And I've assisted public agencies in putting together their mission statements for audit committees, but I have not yet participated in putting together a mission statement for a finance committee, but I have seen them operate, and they do operate differently.
Well, Joe, your expertise and experience would be very helpful in helping us to move forward with the to get this right, and I would reach out to you.
Okay, well, I will get your email from Jeff, and then we'll just exchange emails, and we'll see where it takes us. We could do some outlines, outline some of the things that need to be covered by the finance committee. So, and we like to draw on your experience and what you experienced in on those other corporate boards and extensions that you did.
By all means, have most of my life experience has been startup companies, which is a kind of the Wild West. And so they don't directly apply to public agencies, but you know, my perspective, I'll bring it with me and share it.
Okay. Thank you. Joe, do you have anything to report?
So I don't know where you're at, President Susan, on the agenda.
Reserve fund analysis, is that Joe's baby or?
Or we're actually at the draft district policy manual discussion.
Got it.
Okay. So with your permission, we'll proceed.
Go ahead.
Okay. This agenda item really was initiated by a request from Director Garcia. She initially asked for a discussion about sort of the what is developing a district policy for board members to collaborate. And then she also provided us with an outline of a table of contents of a policy manual that I believe was EID had. And I had staff look into it, and to the best of my knowledge, we were not able to locate an official policy manual for the district. There is a official policy manual for directors, but there isn't one that basically includes all of the different policies that the district has, and it really hasn't been, you know, collected and codified in a way. So with this, I'm going to turn it over to Kelly. She did all the heavy lifting on this. So Kelly, are you just kind of explain what you pulled together here, and then I'll kind of explain what staff is, you know, looking forward to having the board contemplate.
Okay. Jeff is correct in saying that there is no official policy manual put together as one manual for anyone to review. I went through and looked for every policy that the district currently has that the board has passed. And this is meant to be a working document as a draft document so that we can go back and add some policies that were located that we need to put in and correct some of the policies that are already in place that have already been updated or they have errors in them. Before the meeting, for example, Director Saunders sent me policy 4050, which had been updated in December, and I did not have that updated version in what I sent out. So it's things like that that we need a little bit more time to go through and present a final copy for approval from the board. There were four policies that need to be considered, which I put in there as draft form with the word draft across them, which were the records retention, the investment policy, the disposing of surplus, you know, property from the district. And then Director Garcia had brought forward a policy on recruitment and hiring that I put in there. And then we have a resolution that the board adopted in January of 2019, which actually needs to be put into the form of a policy. And I have not found one that I can duplicate yet. So I need to write that out and send it to Barbara's office for approval. And then the last one was the drought contingency plan. I spoke to Adam about it and that's just not written yet, but we wanted a placeholder for it. So that's all I have to say on that.
Yeah, well, thank you. So we're trying to compile all this and we're gonna try and borrow from other districts' policy manuals and the CSDA, whatever guidance they have. They have templates for policies. So I guess what I was thinking, President Souza, please, and other board members, please feel free to jump in, is that we wanted to present this to you all for you all to digest, you know, look at what's in here, report back to staff about what you like, what you don't like, what you think is lacking. You know, this is just basically, as Kelly said, a starting point, a work in progress. And we would bring back another version if it's ready at the next board meeting or certainly by the December board meeting. Any feedback or thoughts or comments?
So if this is Director Saunders here. Yep, thank you, Kelly, for all the work you've been on this. This is a lot of hard work. I've been going through this since my time on the board as well to try and get all of these policies together. And thank you so much. There's a couple of policies that I'll add to staff to continue to look at so we can add on. So a couple of them, like in the legislative office one, we just have to put in the language for the legislative liaison on his term of office. And we also need to put that in with election of officers, the duties of the legislative liaison. We did go over that sometime in 2019 and that's not included in the policies here.
Okay.
Also, based on my JPIA and the risk management that they said and the two bills that we need to make sure we have those policies in the districts as well. That's SB 1343, which is the sexual harassment policies and training, and SB 1300, which is the two go together now, and that's discrimination and harassment. So we also need those trainings put in. And then some of the ordinances policies that we need to have. So like the new one we have the kind of the cross connection, which we really have an ordinance and not a full policy. And this was one of the problems we had with irrigation, with people not really knowing about the cross connection. So that's something we could add in as well. Also, we've had all of our irrigation ordinance meeting. We've still never finished up the irrigation policy. That's another one we'll have to add. And as you said, with Adams working on the drought contingency plan and also a new assessment comes up with that as well. And that's the water assessment that the board will have to do as well with that. And I'll be working with Adam on that. We've went to a couple of meetings and some of the requirements and suggestions and recommendations they said was to have three. So basically what it is there's 3 points in the year where you determine what your water status looks like. And then before you give the final
announcement of your drought contingency plan and what the water availability is. So we'll figure out what those 3 points are to look at and come up with the numbers that and kind of factors that indexes to use. And this will be, there'll be a point where we determine what we are for the season, how we are good for irrigation, if we can do water transfers, all of that kind of is built into the water assessment. And it's built in looking at what our availability is for a regular year, plus I believe it's 2 years with of drought, 2 to 3 years of drought. So you have to be able to have a plan to mitigate for that. So those are the new assessments that came in. And that's what I was, all I've been able to do in the weekend that we had it. So if there's any more, I'll be able to send it in and give those recommendations if I see anything.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Director Saunders. So the plan would be for staff to compile all of these. We would have it all together in a manual, and we would call out which ones have already been approved, which policies have been approved, and then we would call out which ones are draft, and if there's any language that's being suggested changing in any of the ones that are approved, we would put that in the pen, in the manual, in a red line strikeout form, and then it would be brought to the board for consideration, and it would probably be another round of reviews, and then it would eventually be brought to the board for approval and adoption as a formal policy manual, whether it's by me or by successor. So so that's kind of the plan that we're looking at moving forward.
If I could make a suggestion, and this is just kind of in a structural way. I'm a big fan of this. I think it's a very good idea, and it's really important to establish charters and policies and procedures. But at the very beginning, you know, we've used the word manual several times, and I have had experience where these manuals end up becoming the quote Tower of Babel, because you have all these different formats and all these different documents. And to maybe address that up front, if I could, I would suggest we try to establish a piece of software or that we use for building this manual that is designed for this purpose. I'm sure there's many, many out there. We probably don't own it, but if we purchased it, then that structure of that piece of software that's going to represent the backbone of our quote manual will allow us to easily cross-reference and search it and manage it in a way, because these things become living documents. And I would certainly suggest we want to put some sort of sunset clause on every policy, forcing us to go back and review them and edit them and update them. This tool that I'm suggesting, and I'm not recommending one, but I'm quite certain it exists, would make all that easy, both for, you know, assembling it and then managing it going forward. And it might require us to do a little RFP, find the right company that can do this and buy that, so Kelly could then establish the tool she's going to be using. And she can do this in parallel with what she's doing right now, but with the intent at some point, this manual software is something we use to manage all of our policies, procedures, and charters.
Dave, that's a very good idea. And when Director Saunders and I brought this policy manual question up to Steve Palmer, it was discussed at that time that there could have been a subscription service with either Dane's facility, California mm-hmm. Small, you know, sure, Special District sure. Association, or AWWA, one of them, that the GPUD might have had a subscription with. And I believe Jeff was going to look into that. He probably already has. And maybe that's expired by now, but there are services out there where they can electronically provide the templates. And Dane, you might be able to speak more to that. But before you do, Jeff, I've got a question for you. You mentioned earlier that there was a assembly bill, I believe you said 618, that was for the
the COVID-19 policy, should that also be included in our policy manual?
I am not sure. I can get you the, I will scan and send you all the information on these different bills, but I'm not sure because these have sunset clauses and are COVID specific, but they could be part of the health and safety plan. We'll see. We'll consult with legal counsel, and I wholeheartedly agree with both of you. We do need some kind of a template or a standard, and we don't want to reinvent the wheel. And if we can use another district's policy manual as a big template or go with what CSDA has, we still do have a subscription with them, I believe. So, and it's better just to kind of use that as a template and try and massage what we have to fit that moving forward. I think that's absolutely the right way to go.
Sure.
Jeff, there certainly is. I know CSDA has a full-on policy manual with everything you would really need. Frankly, that a lot of districts have found useful. So I can point you in the right direction on that too. And then I just wanted to add too, as someone who's been pushing for the investment policy for, well, since at least 2017, I'm glad it is getting close. We're almost there. And I looked at that one pretty close. It looks like looks like a pretty standard investment policy that checks all the essential boxes for us. And admittedly, we're not going to be a sophisticated investor anyways. We're going to be maybe not sophisticated is not the right word, but it's going to be ours is going to be a more simplified portfolio, let's put it that way. And so I'm glad that we're able to have a roadmap there so we can start looking at some opportunities there. So yeah, happy to give you some information on CSDA.
Thank you. Yeah, we'll take you up on that. And so I see kind of two separate tracks here. One is like building the backbone, the template, the standard, but then there are ongoing modifications to existing policies. So that can be done in parallel. And then as we build up the backbone of the policy manual, we can incorporate new updated policies.
And Jeff, just one final question. And Dane, Phil, busy with the kids. Sorry. Dane, jump in here if you can. What I noticed in starting out with these policies, looks like this is a great start. And Kelly, thank you very much. This is a lot of work to pull all this together. What I noticed might be missing, and it might be missing for a reason, so please clarify, there's the administrative piece of this that might be missing, like a safety training for the staff.
That's in an entirely different policy manual for the staff specifically, yes.
Okay, so HR, hiring, safety training, required state training, that like, okay, so you keep that in a separate, what, department and administrative manual?
That is something that Stephanie updates.
Okay, so that's meant to be kept separate from this document then, correct?
Yes.
Okay, great, thank you.
You're welcome.
Anything else on this topic? All right, seeing none, reserve fund analysis.
This is something that I suggest turning it over to Joe. And without any further ado, Joe, are you ready to?
Yes, I am. In the board packet, you will find a staff report put together by my senior manager, Kristen West. Kristen has been working with Christina over the last few years and delivering the services there that the company provides. And the report starts off and provides what your existing policy is. And there's a narrative portion to the staff report. On page 3 is a rendering of your current policy and what your reserve levels are. So please take in the narrative, save it. The narrative portion basically summarizes, you know, how your policy was established and what the amounts represent. And then on page four, you know, we are recommending some changes to your reserve policy. One is your operating reserve. Your current policy is 120 days of budgeted expenses as your operating reserve. We are recommending that you go do 180 days. And that is the more standard policy regarding operating reserves. In fact, your most recent rate study had recommended 180 days as an operating reserve. Also, GFOA, which is one of the National Associations of Finance and Municipal Government officers, recommend 180 days. So this is very consistent with the industry does across the board. And then the second reserve was your capital reserve. And what's interesting is in your most recent rate study, the 2019 rate study by Hanford Economics, they had noted to target a capital reserve for the replacement value of your assets of each utility. And we are suggesting that you may want to revisit that. And on the page four, you know, I had noted that maybe you should consider something closer to 50% of the replacement value of the assets for each utility operation. And that's, and until you have, you know, it'd be interesting to take in as you, when you do your next rate study, that would be a question of the people who prepare your next rate study. Where do they believe your capital reserve should be at? And I'm not trying to take away from your previous consultant and their perspective, but I believe that, you know, the amount of cash you hold, it should have purpose for it. You're not going to be replacing your entire system in the next 5 years. So somewhere beneath 100% of replacement value is probably a more accurate number. Now, that doesn't take away that there could be other specific reserves you may want to keep because of the situation you might have of a facility or a portion of utility of the utilities that need to be replaced. You may want to establish other reserves, but we are starkly suggesting that, you know, when you have your next rate study, to make that part of the scope of work is to come up with a recommendation of the capital reserve. And then the last
Joe, could I just interrupt you for 1 second?
Sure.
Are you quoting the study from RCAC on capital reserves?
No, it's from Hanford Economics, HEC, to 2019 study.
2019. The only reason I'm interrupting, and I'm sorry to do that, but I know in the RCAC study on the for the 218, we made a sliding scale for, you know, 100% for a small amount of money and 50% for the next, and down to like 10 or 15% for the majority. It was not 100% for the whole thing in that RCAC study for the 218. So that's a very different study than you're referring to, but they both were referring to the capital reserves required.
Correct. And I was just, I read more thoroughly, I read the HEC study, which was for wastewater.
Yeah, that was for the wastewater. The RCAC was for water.
Yeah, and the water study was done in 2017. So right now, your policy has the capital reserves for both utility operations at 100% of replacement value. So I'm just suggesting that, at least for the water fund, that you look at a different number. And
Yes.
So,
I mean, just to finish my thought, I mean, our wastewater enterprise represents several million dollars in capital. Oh, yes. And yes. Our water represents hundreds of millions of dollars in capital.
Correct.
And we couldn't even dream of being 100% funded for the water side.
Correct, you wouldn't.
Okay. All right. So, sorry for interrupting.
That's fine. I appreciate interjecting that information into our discussion.
Okay.
Then your other reserves are the reserves for your SRF loan reserve, which is $587,000, and then another reserve is the Stumping Meadows Emergency Reserve. Now, the dollar amount, you know, I don't have any empirical evidence to tell you where your Stumping Meadows Emergency Reserve ought to be. And maybe we, you know, the district should consider hiring or having an engineer come up with, a structure for establishing a reserve for Stumping Meadows. There was an old agreement with the Dam Authority that you originally had a reserve. I've noted in your financial statements that your reserve for Stumping Meadows is what they call an unrestricted reserve, which is means that there's no outside or external entity currently requiring you to have a reserve for Stumping Meadows. So it doesn't mean you shouldn't have a reserve, you're just not having one enforced upon you. So the question is, what is going to be the purpose of the Stumping Meadows Reserve? And that's something that is worth discussing and coming up with, you know, a dollar amount for Stumping Meadows.
Can I give just a little, sorry to interrupt you, I'll give a little bit of historical context on that, because I was around and at least on the finance committee around 2015 when that happened. And the thinking at the time was that the district should have some sort of separate emergency reserve for Stumpy in case something catastrophically goes wrong. And we had to have some understanding the fact that the district would never be able to do, if something catastrophically went wrong, we would need help, obviously, to do anything, whatever we had to do. But at the same time, that the district needed to have, you know, needs to be able to demonstrate some sort of skin in the game, if you will, that we could basically tap immediately for Stumpy, because everyone understands how important Stumpy is to the, you know, our system and to our district. So the, you know, thumb in the air assessment at that time was, hey, let's put $1 million in a fund or an account. Well, actually, it's probably in a fund, isn't it? I can't remember what we did. But whatever it was, $1 million would be set aside so the district would have that for a emergency reserve for some sort of catastrophic situation.
Okay.
So that's, again, yeah, you're right. No, nothing, no data, no study was done. It was just, this seems reasonable that we could show basically, you know, the state or the feds or anyone else who would help us finance any sort of replacement to that, that, hey, we've got, here's what we can do right now to help get something going. So.
Well, I appreciate that you sharing, Dane. So it's a catastrophic reserve is what you're saying. And a catastrophic reserve, you know, from my experience, is basically you come up with a number that you're going to be comfortable with. You know, how you can respond to a catastrophic situation, you know. And it doesn't matter, you know, it really matters on the exposure of those facilities. So $1 million, if you all agree that $1 million is the proper amount for a catastrophic reserve for Stumping Meadows, then that's what you go with. And then we could document it to that effect. And, you know, I've been in this business long enough. I remember, I think it was about 10 years ago, and Prado Dam, which is down in Southern California, it's right off of Highway 91 between Riverside County and Orange County, and a hole occurred in the dam. And I drove by it, and oh my gosh, it was like a faucet got turned on, dumping right into the Santa Ana River. And that is a catastrophe. And there was a lot of money that the dam authorities and the Army Corps of Engineers spent to take care of the damage. But these facilities are not infallible. And that's why you have catastrophic reserves. And, you know, I never thought I'd see the day when a dam that I have looked at all of my life, because I grew up in Southern California, drove by it since I was, you know, riding with my parents in the station wagon when I was 10 years old. And it wasn't until I was like 50 years old that dam finally got a hole in it. So anyway, so those things do happen. And we could document that it's a catastrophic reserve. And if the dollar amount is $1 million, I just would suggest that periodically you reaffirm that amount, you know, and the boards do change with temperament. And, you know, I would suggest every 4 years you reevaluate that any catastrophic reserve you might set up. And this would be one of those. This would be one that you could change as the nature of the board changes. In regards to your capital reserve and your operating reserve, those are things that you should keep long-term. Whatever the policy may be, whether it's 6 months of operations or 9 months of operations or 4 months of operation, your operating reserve should be established for a long period of time. And same thing with your capital reserve. Capital reserve is basically the nature of what you expect to put, a type of money you would expend over, you know, anywhere between a 5 to 10 year period of time that you should set aside to make sure you don't fall behind on any deferred maintenance or any rehabilitation in your systems. But anyway, so part of this analysis is recommending that you establish reaffirm your Stumpy Meadows reserve, and we will document it as a catastrophic reserve. And as you go forward, you know, the capital reserves is the other, you know, somewhere in the middle is the real number you need. And I know the nature of your district. I mean, you have a huge area geographically, and you have very expensive facilities, and you do not have a suburban or urban customer base. You know, it's not concentrated in any specific area. So the amount of money that you can generate in a short period of time from your client base is going to be very slow. You know, you don't have an opportunity to recoup for situations that you may have to rehabilitate your system. So you need to be mindful of that. And I just threw out in the analysis, start with 50%, somewhere in the middle or somewhere near 100%. You need to figure out what you feel most comfortable with. So in our analysis, we're telling you what your policy is, and then we're making recommendations, suggestions that you address your capital reserve and also address Stumpy Meadows, and just reaffirm what you would desire as a board. And maybe we can give the finance committee that David's talking about, you know, some of the charge of, you know, how does in the future, how some of the capital reserves could be, you know, looked at and what levels might be more appropriate. And remember, both systems are different. The sewer system is different than your water utility. You got a lot more moving parts than your sewage plant. And, you know, it's more mechanical. Depends on the age of the plant, which determines how much money you're going to be putting out over the next 10 years. So, you know, over my career, I have worked for clients that had a water purification plant. And I started with them, you know, 25 years ago. And the nature of the reserves have changed over 3 decades. Now their plant is aging and they're spending a lot of money on their facility because, you know, anything that's mechanical and gets wet costs a lot of money to replace, okay? And there's a lot of redundant systems. So some of your reserves, like for your sewage plant, you know, you have to consider the age of the facilities and the age of the plant, along with just, it's just not bare money It's just not replacement value, but it's also the substance behind those facilities. So anyway, so this is a point of discussion for you to have. You know, in a matter of the next couple of months, we're going to have your audited financial statement, and, you know, transfers are going to be made to the reserves. And, you know, really we want to begin the discussion of where the board feels comfortable with those reserves. So, so that basically concludes my presentation. So, and you can be happy to delegate some of this to one of the subcommittees too. And over time, because sometimes there's no right or wrong answer, but there's just level of comfort of where you want to be. And, but sometimes you need empirical data, you know, like the age of your facilities, maybe a capital improvement plan for some of your systems of when you're going to have to replace this. And that can be serve as a backup or the purpose of some of these reserves. You know, to me, the only real definite reserve is your operating reserve, where it's just more customary. You need to operate and you need the level of cash flow for the operations. And, but anyway, that concludes my presentation. I'll be happy to answer any questions you might have.
Thank you, George.
Joe, one thing. I see that you've been through this meeting this whole time. If you ever want to be up front, you know, the first one to talk about finances, we can change this schedule around. You don't have to sit all through this for 2.5 hours, 3 hours. So, you know, if you ever want to be up front, just tell us. I know I'm up front.
Okay. Well, I appreciate that. I may take you up on that, you know, especially if you have, you know, a Prop 218, you know, rate hearing, I might want to be at the end of that one. So those are long meetings. So
I'll get
you on that later.
Cindy, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Cindy.
That's okay. I didn't mean to cut you off either, Dave. Joe, thank you very much for putting all this information together. It's very helpful. One of the options I'd like to throw out for the board members to think about is maybe broadening out the Stumpy Meadows Emergency Reserve Fund to cover some of the direction that we have received from our dam inspections from State Department of Water Resources and the Dam Safety Division. I believe it was probably a year and a half ago when they were out doing the dam inspection, and Daryl had told us then that they had recommended that we get some of the debris off that dam. And now that the dam is the water levels are a bit lower because of the water transfer and being late in the season before we've gotten any rain, it might be a good time to get some crew out there, whether it's contracted staff or our staff, contracted workers, or our staff. We might want to get crew out there to get the logs and the debris off the dam and do some cleanup around the spillway while the water levels are low. And if we want to use the reserve funds to do some of that work, it might be a good utilization of those reserve funds. So we might want to, I notice here it says a Stumpy Meadows Emergency Reserve. And I don't think that logs that have been there for quite a while and they're just rotting are an emergency. It may be considered an emergency if we've been told by our state inspectors, get those logs off the dam. I don't know, but it might be something for the board members to consider as maybe using some of these reserve funds to do some work like that.
Cindy, go ahead, Jeff.
Go ahead, Dave.
Cindy, as we speak, the staff is up there right now and taking care of that spillway. There's no water going over the spillway. So as we speak, they're up there right now dealing with that situation.
Oh, cleaning up the debris. Okay, great. Good.
Yeah, and they're going to clean out. Daryl has a program to clean out the logs, and he is going to be working on that over the next month or so. But they are working in the spillway, as President Souza said. And we'll send some photos to you all as well to that effect.
Jeff, are they also going to be working on getting the logs off the dam, the length of the dam from the parking lot to the spillway?
Yeah, they're going to remove all the logs that are up along the embankment. So that's part of the program. Daryl says that's something they try and do every year. And Adam, okay, I don't know if you have an idea. Yeah.
Yeah, I can add to that a little bit. Last year we weren't able to because of the water levels. So, but the year before we did remove them all, and that's kind of a continuing DSOD requirement to get those removed. And the water level's low enough, we're gonna be able to access them this year and get them over and get them removed. So yeah, that's after the spillway, you know, a couple weeks here, then we're gonna start working on those logs and some other things up there.
Okay, great. And that's obviously taking out of a different fund than this fund. So I'll just retract my statement, and maybe we do want to leave the Stumpy Meadows Reserve Fund for an emergency.
Well, yeah, case in point, I know of two vehicles that went over the spillway over the years, and they went to the very bottom. So, and they ruined a gate, and it was recovery, but we didn't have to pay for that. But yeah, we do know that vehicles do decide to play Superman over the dam once in a great while. So yeah, I think it's a good thing to have.
We should leave them there as diffusers.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Director Garcia, this work is really part of the operating budget. So it's not coming out of a capital reserve fund.
Okay. Board member request for, oh, I'm sorry. You had something else?
Yep. No. Yeah. So thanks, Joe, for this. And, I'm sure all of us that's been on finance committee have been, you know, looking for reserve policy talks and discussions for a while. Another thing that I would recommend if we can also try and put in is another requirement that the State Water Resource Control Board and DWR does every time we get assessed is a plan for our, to be able to rehabilitate and maintain and replace our significant mileage of pipes. So we might want to think of maybe a pipe reserve as well, or some kind of something in there also to that effect. Because that's probably where our major cost is going to come from, is trying to replace all of our pipelines.
Anything else from the directors?
Yeah, I do, Dave.
Go ahead.
Okay. So I guess specifically to Joe's, I guess kind of, at least what I heard, you were trying to get some feedback on kind of some of these revisions or these suggestions. Is that what you're looking for?
Yes, I am. You know, okay. And
okay. So my personal view is I like taking the operating reserve up to 180 days. I think that's, you know, admittedly it's more conservative, but I think that's good for the operating, because obviously the operating is the operating. And as you pointed out, we have to, you know, you gotta have cash on hand for unforeseen circumstances to, you know, make sure the operation's running. On the capital side, I am reluctant at this point to change the capital reserve at this point for a couple of reasons. One, we have a valid rate study, which had it at 100%. We have significant infrastructure needs that we are already behind on. And to me, changing the reserve target at this point, I don't know, is not the direction that I think that we should be going myself. That being said, to your point about, we do have a rate study coming up again, at least budgeted this year, this fiscal year, and to reevaluate it at that time, I think is quite appropriate. And if then that facilitates a, you know, a broader change in this figure, excuse me, and the actual, you know, the reserve, if you will, I'm totally fine with, but I don't think that we should be changing it at this point until we have that information going forward, because again, we have a valid rate study that was, you know, adopted and implemented. So, I mean, we're not going to get, yeah, we know we're not going to get to the 5.2 million amount anytime soon. But so that's my feeling on that. On the Stumpy side, you know, I kind of gave the history on that. I think it's fine to have it literally at like a million. So there's, I think there's some interest that's accumulated in that account over the past few years, the 87,000, and I'm fine with moving that to the capital and putting it to use. Otherwise it's just sitting in the Stumpy reserve right now. And so taking it down a little bit makes sense to me. So I think that's, those are my thoughts on your suggestions. Again, obviously, like everybody else said, appreciate the work done on this and the recommendations. And I think there's definitely some ways to, you know, it helps clarify it for us and make a good point about needing to reevaluate a lot of these reserves and the targets and everything else on a regular basis. So I'll stop there. Thank you.
Board member request for additions to future meeting agendas. Mike?
None for me.
Are you okay?
Cindy? It may come after the meetings this month.
Cindy, you have anything?
The only one I have is I'd still like to put the emergency notification system on there for the email so we can talk about ways to improve reaching out to folks and having them be, you know, in the opt-in for the emergency notification. I know we talked about putting that on as we move forward with Tyler, but it sounds like we're making good progress with Tyler, so it might be time to maybe discuss that, put that on the next agenda. That's all I have.
Okay.
Director Dave? Garcia, I'm sorry, President Souza. I thought we put something on like that last month. Was that not what you were looking for?
We did, but we decided to put it off, and it was discussed that we were going to wait until Tyler moved a little bit forward to see what Tyler was going to have in their software for doing the notifications. So if we need to put it off again, Jeff, we can certainly do that if you want to talk to Christine about that and where it might best fit with the work progress that's happening with Tyler.
Would you basically an explanation about how the email system with Tyler would work? Would that be?
Jeff, what I'm more concerned about is if we have a situation where it's either a pipeline break or an outage or a fire, like we had the Country Fire, is, you know, getting the word out that, you know, there may be an interruption in service or any emergency notification that deals with our distribution system, our water treatment system, our ditches, our pipeline. It's what I'm more concerned about is how do we get the word out? We have 4,000 customers, only 400 on the email system. And right now that's our best emergency notification system until Tyler comes on board and maybe changes that if they have some type of a system to enhance that email. And Christine was talking about it being an opt-in situation and waiting a bit until we got to that point. So if it's appropriate to put it on time-wise because we're making such good progress with Tyler that she can explain that to us next month, great. If you discuss that with her and feel like it's best to put it off, I can defer that to your judgment too. We can put it off until it is something that needs to be discussed and she can explain to us how the system would be more robust than it is now.
We can provide an explanation about how the system, well, Tyler's system will, depending on how it will tie in with our GIS system, we can kind of give an update about how we envision that working. We'll try and have that ready for next month.
Thank you.
Dave, do you have anything?
Help no, him. I'm fine.
Dane?
Sure, thank you.
Great, 2 hours, and it was all positive meeting. Thank you, everybody. And Barbara, you didn't say a word, so I guess you won't bill us for this meeting.
That's wishful thinking there.
Next meeting is November 10th. Take care of everybody.
All right. Okay.
Thanks.
Take care, Dave.
Right. Bye now. Thanks for your thoughts.
Wait. Motion to adjourn.
Yes. Makes the motion to adjourn.
Thank you.
All right, I'll second
that. Cindy's got it. Aye.
All in favor?
Aye.
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 All right. Goodbye, everybody.
All right, bye, everybody.